Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. Break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rant of Troy Radio. It is the CarCast after USC's Cotton Bowl. Hold on. A loss. Wait. Oh, SC lost the Cotton Bowl? Alicia. Is that right?
That's what the score tells me.
Yeah. 46-45. SC loses the Cotton Bowl to the Tulane Green Wave in a, how do you call it? An epic collapse, embarrassing collapse, stunning collapse. I don't know. Stunning is the word. Fully team effort of a collapse. Involved the special teams offense and defense collaborating on the collapse. SC loses at the end in a game in which Caleb Williams, a month after pulling his hamstring, throws for 462 yards, 5 touchdowns. Brendan Rice has a career day, the fourth most receiving yards in USC bowl game history. The Trojans score 45 points, 594 yards of offense. They average 7.1 yards per play, despite missing two All-Americans on the offensive line. And they lose 46-45 on the second-to-last play of the game. A touchdown pass from Michael Pratt to tight end Alex Bowman. And that was all she wrote. We are here to discuss it. Take your comments here live on YouTube and so much more. As always, you can follow the show over on Twitter Twitter and Facebook at Rant of Troy. You can email us at rantoftroy@fanside.com. That's our phone number. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. I'm your host, Mike Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rant of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. You put it on Twitter. Actually, you told me and then put it on Twitter. I nearly stole your tweet for a second. The most embarrassing USC collapse since the Jail Mary. Right?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Since the Jail Mary, maybe going back further, if you can think of another embarrassing collapse, the Jail Mary is the one that I think of.
The Jail Mary, very similar, a game and also in
you
which
just, you had the game.
An SC player tried to fair catch and couldn't catch on to the ball.
Well, yeah, that certainly is there.
Yeah.
It's weird because we went into this game thinking like technically it doesn't matter. But it kind of does because I wanted to see USC finish the season strong. It felt, for the most part, like they were going to finish the season strong. We got to see Caleb Williams be incredible. We got to see Brendan Rice prove that he does have a role in this offense going forward.
Absolutely.
When he plays like that, we saw Relique Brown have an increased role in this offense and look like the kind of things that we'll look forward to see him doing even more of in the future. There was a lot to be excited about here. Except that we also saw the same old that we saw all season, that the offense was able to overcome in several games against UCLA and Notre Dame and Arizona and all the rest. Mm-hmm. And in games that USC's offense was not able to overcome, like the first Utah game and the second Utah game, which the second Utah game, honestly, I sort of shrugged about it. The moment Caleb Williams pulled his hamstring, everything about that game felt like it was in an alternate universe. I don't know what that game looks like in a universe where Caleb Williams doesn't pull his hamstring, because for a long time in that game, the defense was holding up. The defense was doing just fine. They collapsed late.
I think realistically, it probably looks a lot like the first one.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, does SC end up with the ball at the end?
Yeah, but that's all that was sort of put to the side. We don't know what that game meant. We did not know what that game meant. Yeah. And I didn't expect to have the kind of clarity coming out of this game about that game. Because Alex Grinch and this staff had a month to prepare for Tulane. They had their linebackers healthy. They had their secondary healthy.
Yeah.
They had their defensive line healthy. They had Tulu Tupelotu opt in to play in the bowl game. They had Mekhi Blackmon opt in to play in the bowl game. Mm-hmm. This was literally the strongest that USC was going to be on defense was going to be in this game since the start of October, we assume, right? And yet they were worse than they were in October. They were embarrassing.
Well,
it was.
We look really silly, I think, for, you know, talking in October and parts of November about whether or not the defensive struggles was tied to Eric Gentry being out.
Yeah.
Because through the first six games, we've talked about this a million times. Through the first six games, SC wasn't terrible defensively.
No, they weren't.
And that corresponded to Eric Gentry's health. Then they took a major turn for the worse, which, you know.
But this is why I have clarity about how I feel coming out of this game.
Yes, right.
Because when USC struggled on defense at the end of the season, I was able to look at it from a logical perspective and say, okay, what happened between the first half of the season and the second half? Well, personnel change. So maybe that's all it was. Maybe it's just the personnel deficiencies were the situation. Instead, this game proves that no, it was the defensive staff scheme and personnel all coming together to be crap. Right. Because in this game, Tulane has two punts in the first half. The second of those punts was a literally self-inflicted gunshot wound from them. They dropped two passes that would have given them first downs and gave USC that stop. So in actuality, USC has two stops in this game. One is the first, the opening drive, which is a reasonable stop. And then they get the fumble, which, by the way, was just sort of one of those fluky fumbles. Like, it didn't look like there was anything in particular about that. It was USC being opportunistic, yes. But like every other drive in this game is a score for Tulane. And it comes down to being found out by an opposing offense. Mm-hmm. Because the USC offense that was fielded in September, the USC defense that was fielded in September was capable of getting stops aside from the turnovers that they got. They were getting stops on top of the turnovers that they got.
Right. Well, that's why I think it's easy to look at it and say, well, at the time it was easy for us to look at it and say, well, maybe it's Eric Gentry being out. Because the timeline corresponds. And I think it's easy from the outsider perspective to say, well, it was the turnover luck because that timeline vaguely corresponds. But like both of those are just not the case because when you look at it, like SC's best, you know, defensive game of the year was the game that they forced no turnovers against Washington State. Right.
Yeah.
So like it wasn't just the turnovers.
That I know wasn't Washington's, it alone. No.
Yeah, and I know Washington State was like the eighth best offense the SEC is going to play all season or whatever.
But the point is that Washington State's offensive talent, like, if you struggle
probably
with...
Probably not too dissimilar from Tulane.
If you struggle with UCLA or Utah or even Arizona, if you struggle with their offenses, I sort of look at it and go, well, those are good offenses. They know what they're doing. Like, they're very, very, very good.
Right.
Tulane is not a bad offense, but they're not an elite offense. What we said going in was that this is an offense that can put up 35 points. They know what they're about. They're going to run the ball. Spears is going to be their main man. And I think that's what's frustrating about this game. We said that we've said many, many times that if you as a defensive coordinator go in and say, we're just going to stop the one thing that you want to do and force you to beat us elsewhere. Well, USC couldn't even we all knew Tulane was going to run the ball with Tajay Spears. He has 17 carries for 205 yards and four touchdowns. So USC knew the danger man. They knew what they were going to try to do with him, and they couldn't stop him. And they knew what they were going to get from Michael Pratt, and they let him burn them in ways that had nothing to do with his arm until the end. They knew everything that they needed to expect going in. And I have been beating the drum of USC doesn't have the personnel on defense to be an elite defense. Well, USC didn't need an elite defense to win 12 or 13 games this year, it turned out. USC needed a top 40 defense, which is not unreasonable to expect. Even if you look at the talent level that USC has on defense, the deficiencies, the struggles that they have, all of that kind of stuff, they didn't have the personnel on defense to be a really good defense. They didn't need to be a really good defense. They just needed to be the kind of defense that doesn't give up 46 points.
Yeah. Well,
three losses this year, all 40 point games for the opposing team, and twice to Utah, a very good offense with a very good quarterback and really good running back and really good tight end and all of those. And like I tweeted out something about the personnel and saying that, like, at a certain point, you need to do less with more. The reason Alex Grinch has the jobs that he has, that he has had and currently has, is because of what he did at Washington State, which was literally a less with more scenario. Washington State's defensive talent that was available to him at that time was not up to par with the elite defenses out there, but they still had a very, very good defense. So what you needed from Lincoln, from Alex Grinch this season, particularly in this game, when you weren't facing the best of the best sort of offense in the Pac-12 or whatever, what you needed from him was to do less with more. And instead they did worse with what they had. He just got outcoached. He just got outcoached. His players got outplayed. They spent all the whole month talking about how they were going to respond to the criticism they had in the Rose Bowl. Sorry, in the Pac-12 title game, they were going to respond because everyone was writing them off. They were yapping on Twitter about how Alex Grinch is a great defensive coordinator, all of that kind of stuff. You have to walk the walk at a certain point. And like at a certain point, you have to ask, why are players being played for the first three quarters of this game until they finally, in the final quarter of the final game of the season, say, screw it, we're going to put Rajon Davis in. And what does he do? He goes out there and makes some plays. And maybe he missed some plays too, but everyone else who was out there at linebacker all damn season was missing plays left and right and weren't making plays to make up for it. So like, why did it take that long for that change to get made? Why do they have zero answer for whatever Tulane threw out there? It was just a complete and utter failure. And I'm angry about it because Caleb Williams is a generational player. He's a Heisman winner who plays at a level that I cannot even fathom. I keep saying it in other arenas, but like, I watch a lot of the NFL because of my day job now. Like, I watch the whole NFL slate because I'm covering it now. And I didn't do that in the past necessarily. I would tune in when I would, but now I watch every second of it. And Caleb Williams is the closest thing that anyone has ever come to being Patrick Mahomes. And he's doing it as a sophomore in college. That is the level of quarterback that USC has available to them. They will not have this level of quarterback available to them probably ever again. Malachi Nelson may be great, but the chances that he's this great are low. not a mark against him. It's just like generational quarterback, generational playing from Caleb Williams. And he puts in a generational performance on 80% of a hamstring where he can't even run the way he normally would. And they lose this game. Like a game that he didn't have to play in, that he could have easily opted out of, that he had a built-in excuse to not play in because he was on that hamstring. Caleb Williams bucks the trend and chooses to play in a game he doesn't need to play in. And this is the performance that USC gives him. It makes me angry because it's a complete and utter waste of a generational talent. And my worry is that I come out of this game thinking if USC has a 1-year window left with Caleb Williams to win a national title, to do something in the college football playoff. They have a 1-year window with him, with this generational talent. And if Alex Grinch is the defensive coordinator next year, I won't bet on that based on what we've seen through the progression of this season. Before we got on, we were sort of talking as we were getting our stuff ready. And it's like all offseason we talk about every single year. It's not about wins and losses. It's about the eye test. And particularly the eye test from start to finish. From a coaching perspective, you're looking to see, did the players feel like they were being coached up? Did they feel like they understood the system better? Did they feel like they were being put in position to succeed? If they made a mistake in the first half of the season, did it get corrected so that it didn't happen again? All of those things that tell me that there is a good coaching job being done. We've seen the opposite from that, from the defense. So at a certain point, it falls at the feet of the defensive coordinator. And I am sympathetic to the talent level that's available. I am sympathetic to the need for reinforcements. But at a certain point, if you want to win a national title, if you want to make a big boy decision and win a national title, this can't stand. You cannot react to this with we'll get better next year. Because if you get better next year, it's going to be by a small margin that's not going to be good enough to put you up in the upper echelon with Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia and TCU now. Certainly not next year in the Pac-12 with Bo Nix returning, with Michael Penix returning, and you having to play both of those quarterbacks.
Yeah, I'm with you every step of the way. I just want to flip this around one moment here. With the exception of SC losing the game, was this not the best outcome possible?
Well,
so going into this, we had talked about it that, you know, we didn't know how good Caleb Williams, how good Caleb Williams was going to look in this game coming off of the hamstring injury. We didn't know what the offensive line was going to look like without two All-Americans. The offensive line was atrocious against Utah, especially you add on Brett Nealon going down in that game as well, in addition to Andrew Voorhees didn't play against Utah in the Pac-12 championship game. So those things were bad. SC could not run the ball against Utah at all, considering they ran all over them in the first game on a per-play basis and all those things. They could not do that in the second game. Could not run the ball, which compounded things when Caleb Williams was hurt. Well, you look at this game. Going into it, my expectations for the offense at an all-time low. They come in there and they move the ball for 594 yards.
Offensive line was great.
They gained 7.1 yards per play. That sort of died down in the fourth quarter when they tried to slow things down a bit with a lead. But Caleb Williams, yeah, he wasn't at 100%. He wasn't making those runs that he was making in November. But he looked incredible for how limited he was. He's making all the throws that you needed to see from him. He made one really bad decision on the interception, but whatever, he more than makes up for it everywhere else, right? You saw Brendan Rice, a wide receiver who has been maligned all season for several reasons, about key drops. Maybe not using his body as much as people would like and whatnot. He looks every bit the physical talent that you wanted from him, using his body in space to to win jump balls, making crazy catches and going on the run. All of those things, you put it all together, and it works. The offensive line, like you said, like didn't look like they were down to All-Americans. They were able to run the football in this game. Relique Brown averaged 10.2 yards per carry. Austin Jones didn't have that success. He averaged 3 yards a pop. It was like a Sonny Bird running game with him. But like the point is, they answered the bell on offense, which to me, this game was all about setting up next year. And what is it going to look like next year when Caleb Williams has to come back, have all the pressure of winning the Heisman and can he do it again and all that stuff, and now has to do it without those guys on the offensive line like Andrew Voorhees, who's just been incredible for SC the last couple of years. SC showed that they can play without them. SC showed that they have a receiving core that without Jordan Addison didn't skip a single beat. And now they're going to add Dorian Singer and Makai Lemon and all those guys for next year. So you have to feel really good about that too. It was the defense that let them down again. And the defense that let them down in epic proportions at the end, especially. And doesn't that force them to, you know, make more changes than maybe they would have? Because I think that in the perfect best scenario, SC has this same offensive performance, but say the defense completely answers the bell, repeats the Washington State game in terms of how stout that they were, and they win this game, let's say 45-17, right? And you feel so good about both sides of the ball. Couldn't you, if you're the coaching staff, convince yourself that the defense has turned it around?
Yes. Yeah. No, and you're right.
There's no turning around. Like, there's no convincing yourself that now. And now you get obviously you wanted to win this game, but now you get the embarrassment side of all of the people upset about the game. You know, everyone in the YouTube comments right now upset about this game. You're going to get, pressure from, boosters and all that stuff. Everywhere that Lincoln Riley goes to have a meet and greet with boosters and alumni groups and all that stuff, people are going to be talking to him about the defense. People are going to talk about the defense. Every media interview is going to be about the defense. Everything. There's going to be pressure on him to make a change of some sort, whether that's replacing Grinch, whether that's, reading Grinch the Riot Act. I don't know. And maybe it's something else. I don't know what it is, but like this to me, this game proved that SC can perform at a high level on offense, even with an injured quarterback, which I think was huge. And that changes absolutely needed it on defense. And as much as I don't think that firing someone after year one is the greatest, I think that when you have a performance like this, and given that the three losses were all on the back of defensive breakdowns, I don't see why you can't at this point, especially given the magnitude of how this ended so terribly. Mind you, certainly part of it had to do with special teams setting up the safety at the end, but that's how the game of football works.
Well, and that's my thing, is like a lot of people are talking about how USC needs a special teams coach. Special teams certainly didn't help in this game at all. Special teams contributed, but in the same way that the offense contributed in the end to the loss because of the safety that they gave up, like, but that stuff happens. You shouldn't need, when you have a quarterback who throws 5 touchdowns, 400 yards, and performs the way that Caleb Williams did in this game, you shouldn't need the game to come down to a safety, like to come down to a boneheaded special teams play and a safety. And like, that's what it ultimately felt like it came down to. But when push came to shove, like it was the defense. It was the defense over and over and over and over again. And it was the defense in a weird sense too, because the one time they decided to extend a drive and have to force Tulane to take some time off the clock was at the end when you were denying Caleb Williams seconds. Right. Because it would have been better if they had just let Tajay Spears walk into the end zone on the first play of that drive and then let Caleb Williams deliver a drive going back the other way. The problem is that the defense hasn't been able to hold when they need them to hold. They've given up 40 points in the biggest games of the year and don't give special teams or the offense any leeway to deal with the random crap that happens. Caleb Williams throws a bad interception in this game. If he doesn't throw that interception, does USC lose? Maybe not, because the extra touchdown could have helped. But that's not the difference in the game, because your quarterback should be able to throw an interception and just have it happen and your team make up for it. Mm-hmm. But the defense has not made up for it on any of in these games, certainly not enough to be on the same field as a Caleb Williams playing the way that he does, or Brendan Rice playing the way that he was today, or anything like that. Yeah. Like, it's untenable. It's untenable. You cannot have this good of an offense and that bad of a defense. And it's not even like I was saying before, like, they could have given up 35 points in this game and it would have been fine. Tulane averages 35 points a game this year. Like, that's their scoring average, 35 points a game. If you had given me that before the game, I would have taken it, because you win the game. Giving up 46.
Well, yeah, like, so there's a tweet going around from Tony Burnett, former USC defensive back, that says, we had a national championship offense and a Popeye's Bahamas Bowl defense.
Yeah.
And the funny part to me is I look back at the Pete Carroll era and how I always bemoaned the 2005 team when people said that was like the greatest team ever because of the defense. Like, anyone who watched the Pete Carroll era could tell you that the 2005 defense was probably Pete Carroll's second worst. Mm-hmm. 2009 was probably worse.
Yeah.
His second worst. But yet the irony of SC would kill to have that 2005 defense. You look up those numbers, and you talked about it before, like, all SC needs to do to be a playoff team is have a top 40 defense. Yeah, top 40 is just competent. That Pete Carroll defense in 2005 was like a top 25 defense. And they were bad. Like, we consider them bad.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's like Alabama fans wanting Pete Golding fired because they gave up 20 points a year. Like, 20 point, the average 20 points. Like, you would take, but why do Alabama fans want Pete Golding fired?
Yeah.
They want him fired because he gave up in the two losses that they had. They gave up 30 and 40 some odd points in the losses. That was the issue.
I'm less concerned about the losses in the sense of, you know, if you're going to be a good team and you're going to lose to good teams.
Yeah.
Go look at Ohio State, right? Ohio State's two losses, they give up 40 points, right? I know Ohio State fans want Ryan Day fired, so maybe it's just a rhetorical
Everyone
question.
Everyone hates their defensive coordinator.
But, like, you know, at this point, in college football, if you lose, the odds are that you're giving up 40 points in a
loss. But you're doing,
like, that.
That
just is the case.
Doing that to Michigan and Georgia is different than doing that to Tulane.
To Tulane, yes. But UCLA, by the metrics, is the top five offense in the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. Like, to me, it's less about those losses. It's about the consistency of week in and week out. Just like we talked about before, it's less about the eye test. I mean, less about the record. It's about the eye test. It's about where
– which
the general – like, the full story matters to me than the individual thing.
Which,
like,
by the way, if you watch college football, certainly during bowl season – you come away realizing that no one can tackle and everyone sucks.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch TCU in Michigan and Ohio State in Georgia, you saw a lot of missed tackles. You saw a lot of miscues on defense.
Yeah.
So that's not necessary. I mean, it's an issue. I'm not saying it's not an issue.
Yeah. And I'm saying giving up 40 points in a game is not a problem.
It's
giving
that
up
you
40
gave
points
up-
several times. And the way that you did it.
Well, I saw a tweet somewhere. I don't remember who sent it, but USC gave up gave teams wins where they led for all of 7 seconds or something like that.
Yeah, Tulane didn't lead until the last
minute, and Utah didn't until the last. And that is the biggest, I think, criticism you can have of this defense is when you that, and that's the difference between a defense that is opportunistic and takes care of business.
Yes.
USC's defense in the first half of the season was opportunistic.
Right.
They didn't take care of business this year. That's what they needed. They needed to step up in the moment. It doesn't matter if you gave up four touchdowns earlier in the game. Can you get the stop at the end? And they get Tulane into fourth and 10, and what happens?
Yeah.
They give up an easy pass.
Yeah.
You know, they
29.3 yards per completion is insane.
Yeah, when you only have eight completions.
Right.
Like, you know, this is not an all-world quarterback that you're facing.
Right. So, I thought Pratt did not look good at all in this game.
I thought he ran effectively.
Yes, but I was expecting Tulane's efficiency on offense is weird because you look at, you know, his passer rating is 201.5, but that's all just because of the huge, huge plays. He was 8 of 17, Pratt was, but there were some drops in there. I don't think he found the consistent success that, say, Drew Pine found. And yet these are completely different games. And that's part of because against Notre Dame, SC forced Notre Dame to be one-dimensional and go to the pass. In this game, Tulane was one-dimensional in that they were a running team and completely gashed SC, averaging 9 yards a carry on the ground. Oh, and then just put in a bunch of 50 and 60-yard passes just like randomly thrown in there. And yeah. you can't give up those.
Can't give up 10 yards a play.
No, you can't give up chunk plays to a one-dimensional team. And in a game like this, a team that becomes one-dimensional, and especially one that becomes one-dimensional because by choice, because they're gashing you with the one dimension that they want to use against you, right? Yeah. Which is what happened in this game for Tulane is that they knew that they could run all over SC with Tajay Spears. So they were just going to keep doing that. And he runs for 205, which is insane. It's a lot of yards. SC should not be giving up, you know, 100 yards rushers, especially 200 yard rushers.
With 12 yards a carry for him.
Right. Yeah. And a long of 62. At one point he had a 152 and 110 of it was on two carries. So yeah it's, you know, SC, this is a defensive loss of, you know, epic proportions. And you talk about the key moments there. And yeah, SC leads this game not only the entire way. Tulane doesn't lead until the last 8 seconds. But even on top of that, SC was killing clock in the fourth quarter, as they should have been going down the field, because they had this game up by two scores. Seemingly everything was in hand. They gave up a touchdown drive to make it a one-score game. And then the Max Williams play. Let's talk about the kickoff that leads to the safety. This has been a talking point all season. USC's lack of a special teams coordinator. And SC has, you know, struggled fielding kickoffs. For a long time, they did not fair catch them, and then they started fair catching them, and then they Max Williams tried to fair catch a ball that he probably should have just let go.
I don't know. Fine.
I mean, it's easy to say that in hindsight.
Hire a special teams coordinator. At this point, it's not my money. I don't care. But like this whole, you need a special team. No, you just need somebody to tell these guys not to be idiots. Like, it's not. USC had a special teams coordinator for a decade and everyone hated him and special teams sucked. And all we spent every episode was talking about how terrible the special teams was. Like, I don't think that's the fix. I think the fix is literally just players not being boneheads, but also watch college football across the country. Right. Special teams are bonehead plays all over the place, left and right. Everywhere this way and that way.
Yeah.
If you had a defense that wasn't giving up 46 points in a game, then it wouldn't be as big of an issue.
To go back to the defensive thing, like, yes, every team gives up 40 points in a loss, but it's the wealth of those plays that get you there. And it's the full picture for SC on special teams just isn't good. It's just, it's not that this moment happened. It's that this moment happened time and time and time and time again for SC. And then it happened in a moment where they certainly could not afford for this to happen. Right? Like, it's just the, it's all of it. It's all of it.
Yeah. That's it.
And then SC gets the ball at the 1 yard line, has to get out of it. And I saw somewhere, I think it was in the chat here on YouTube, I didn't know who said it, but someone said that running the plays up the middle, while I was thinking Riley calling the plays running up the middle at the goal line, I think the play calling there is always going to be confirmation bias.
Yeah.
If Caleb Williams is rolling out, and the pocket collapses and he takes a sack, then why didn't
they just run it up the middle?
Yeah. So I don't know. To me, when you have field position there, you have to win your blocks up front. If you don't win your blocks up front, it doesn't matter what the play call is. You're sort of doomed.
Yeah.
And SC was not winning the battle in the line of scrimmage there. And didn't matter what the play calls were. It wasn't going to work out.
It's unfortunate, too, because the offensive line really did do an outstanding job for most of that game.
Yeah.
And in that moment, they didn't get the job done, and Tulane got the better of them.
Right.
I think you can make the argument to keep the ball in Caleb's hands. I think you can get mad if Caleb throws the ball and that stops the clock, and then people are like, well, you're not running out the clock and you have to punt from the inside of your own end zone, and then
stuff
happens there. I think you're in a no-win situation there, which is why I keep coming back to your...
I think the offense is mostly blameless.
The offense
loss,
put up 45 points with Caleb Williams at 80% on his hamstring.
Yes.
USC's offense is not... Like, USC's offense is better than what we saw in this game.
There's only three things that you can complain about this offense for, and it is the Caleb Williams interception.
Was a bad interception. It was just a bad decision.
Settling for field goal attempts twice, one of them that was missed.
Yeah.
So if you, and,
from
and,
52 yards. So, like, I can't even get mad at Dennis Lynch for that one. Like,
right.
It's a 52-yard kick. College kickers usually don't make those kicks. It's fine.
Yeah, and... You should have won the game despite that anyways. Yeah. And then the safety. But, like, all these things, I don't know. Like, I think those three
points.
Blunders are more than made up for with everything else that SC did on offense.
Yeah.
They just need the defense to come through one time. And they didn't.
That's really what it comes down to. So that's the big question that we have going into the offseason is, what do you do about it? And I think that there's a train of thought that if you're Lincoln Riley, you can go in and say, or certainly Alex Grinch can go into Lincoln Riley's office and say, hey, look, we just got Keon Bars. We just got Mason Cobb. We just got these guys who are Christian Roland Wallace. Like, we're bringing in Tackett Curtis and these guys recruiting and stuff. Like, we're going to be better next year. I promise we'll do everything we can to be better next year, blah, 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 blah. Or if you're Lincoln Riley, you can understand that Alex Grinch has been your offensive coordinator for how many, like, this is where I'm frustrated is, like, one of the things that we said going in with Alex Grinch as the coordinator was that USC's defense was so bad this past year that, like, we would take the level of bad that Alex Grinch was at Oklahoma because it would be an improvement. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be to average 25 points a game given up would be a vast improvement. You just sort of looking at the score bugs and stuff like this, they gave up 40 points once all of last season. They gave up 30 points, five times. So whatever, like, you would have taken those numbers. The problem is that, like, those numbers are part of the reason why Oklahoma didn't get over the hump with Lincoln Riley, despite his Heisman winners, despite his electric. Yeah.
Well, that's what Sooner Boy 69 told us.
Well, and somebody, I pinned a message in here. David Garcia says, I hate that this is giving the idiot Oklahoma fans validation about Grinch. I'm with you. I'm right there, because I went into this episode thinking, like, I'm going to have to sit here and say, you know what, Oklahoma fans, they were wrong about a lot and they're bitter and stupid, but they were right about, like, the Alex Grinch experience is very frustrating. This is the question that I have for Lincoln Riley. He has been living the Alex Grinch experience for, this is now the fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
So is Lincoln Riley going to be ruthless enough of a head coach to recognize that this train is not going to take him to the promised land? We do have some post-game quotes from Lincoln Riley now. Chris Trevino tweets, Riley asked about the confidence in DC Alex Grinch. He said, they just played the game 15 minutes ago.
Hey everyone, it's Mike Silva from Talkin' Mets. I am always about helping my listeners, and today I want to help you eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. My wife and I tried it, and we love it. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. I was tired after a long day the other night, and I was at the table eating a delicious meal just minutes after walking in the door. Are you looking for a gourmet meal? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccoli, and asparagus. You can also choose from a weekly menu of 35 options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Don't forget your add-ons. There are 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? The Mets set the playoffs as their goal this year. Get started today and fuel up your springtime goals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/Mets50 and use code Mets50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code Mets50 at factormeals.com/Mets50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I tried Factor and loved it. Why don't you?
Lisa, you know the only good thing about football season being over?
There's literally nothing good about the football season being over. It's just an endless wait until the fall.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's tournament season. The best way to take your mind off the endless wait.
That is true. I may not want to watch the men play, but the USC women are pretty awesome.
Exactly, but it's not just SC. There's high-stake basketball moments all over the country. But you know what? They get even better with Prize Picks.
So you're saying the only thing better than watching Juju Watkins is taking the more on Juju Watkins.
Bingo. You can now turn your hoops knowledge and love of Juju Watkins into serious cash, because you can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. Turn $10 into $1,000 with college basketball, NBA, and NHL entries. Best of all, Prize Picks lets you get on the action on more than 30 states across the country, including Texas, Georgia, and California.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, download the app today and use the code RANOFTROY for a first deposit match up to $100.
That's the Prize Picks app with the code RANOFTROY for the first deposit match up to $100.
Pick more.
Pick less.
It's that easy.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
He's not going to go into big picture stuff at the moment. Quote, we will take a deep dive of it.
I read that, and I think that's not a bad thing.
That's a
he very easily could have said, that, you know, he has the utmost confidence, blah, blah, and all that. And mind you, these are just words. So
They don't mean anything.
It could have been the vote of confidence thing or whatever.
The fact that there wasn't a vote of confidence does say something, because if you're Lincoln Riley and you have to look Caleb Williams in the eyes after that performance, and you have to understand that he wanted that game bad and you didn't put his team in a position to get it. And there's the videos of Caleb Williams sitting on the sideline, on the bench during that final drive for Tulane, like just looking the way that all of us at home felt, like there's no way they're getting the stop here. Like they're not getting the stop. Mm-hmm. And once you've lost that confidence, like, I don't know how you can go back in and say that, that this is the way to go. Do I think that USC is going to make a change? No, I still don't. The 99% of the time, you don't make a change after 1 year of a coordinator. But they, like, it feels like they should. It feels like you can't come back from this. And that's sort of where I'm at. I can't come back from this on Grinch.
I'm always of the thought that if you're going to get fired in year one, something has to be egregious. You have to be related to Paul Hackett and turn Russell Wilson into a pumpkin and get fired for it. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be truly bad. I don't think, despite all of the criticisms for Alex Grinch, and rightfully so, I don't think it has gotten to that point until 8 seconds left in the game against Tulane.
You know what I mean? Hold on. Can I read you?
Go.
October 15th, 42 points.
No, I hear you.
October 29th, 37 points. November 5th against Cal, 35 points.
Yeah, no, I...
Colorado, 17 points.
I got you.
November 19th, UCLA, 45 points. November 26th, Notre Dame, 27 points, making Drew Pine look like a good quarterback.
Right.
Utah, December 2nd, 47 points.
Yes, and those are January all reasons 2nd, to tell Tulane, him that, you 40, know, year 46 two is, points. Is put up or shut up. I think that, to my point, it has to be like otherworldly bad to fire someone in year one. And for me, the way this game ended solidifies that. Like that it is. Like, it's now, like, you know, you absolutely can do it. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter how we got here. We got here. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a scale to this.
Yeah.
Like, just because it took me to get to the 8 seconds, the end of the game, to say that, yes, you fire Alex Grinch, isn't support of everything that happened. Like, I know that, you know, fire and not fire is a binary choice, but like, but that's not how you get to that decision. You know what I mean? You feel what I'm saying here?
Yes. Yeah. No, that I get you. I get you. And like I said, I don't think that Lincoln Riley will pull that trigger. My hope would be in the background that you, contact Jim Leonard from Wisconsin, and if
formerly from Wisconsin,
and if he's willing, you literally throw whatever salary he wants to come, and if he doesn't bite, then maybe you just give Grinch another chance. But like, I think USC should in the background find somebody who they identify as the best possible addition and see if they are willing to come. But I think it's 95% more likely that Alex Grinch will be USC's defensive coordinator in 2023 or for the 2023 season. So you have to live with that. And the plus side is that you do have guys coming in from the portal. You do have guys coming in from the recruiting staff. And maybe that's the difference. Where my faith in the DC has gone away is that you can sort of hand him a few better players, but if you're not capable of scheming up to stop Tulane from scoring 46 points, then how are you going to be capable of scheming up something to keep Ryan Day from beating you in a title game, or
right.
you know, Alabama, or like, because that's the level that USC should be looking at least in 2023, which is why I think the timing on this is so frustrating. Because if it felt like USC, if the window felt like it was going to be open in 2024, then I would just feel differently about this, because 2023 wouldn't be looming the way that it feels like it's looming. But to me, it's looming. And we hope isn't very encouraging going into that season, given what USC potentially has in Caleb Williams.
Yeah. Warren in the chat says, why isn't anyone putting blame on Mario for not getting the catch? I think absolutely dumb. is the trigger point.
It's dumb.
I think that's the trigger point for sure for SC to get into this whole mess. But like, you still have to make the stop as well. Like both of those things can be, but both of those things are the problem. I guess my thing is, not catching the ball one time, is a problem for Mario Williams. But like the special teams problems go more beyond that. And defensively, the defensive problems go beyond the last drive, but like the last drive is just the epitome of exactly everything that was wrong with SC on defense. And it's not just about the last drive either. It's that SC got in the point where they gave up the drive before that to make it a one score game, to where the safety ended up mattering, right?
Well, and yeah, that's the thing is that they gave up that touchdown drive with 4 minutes left in the game.
Yeah.
And that was the kickoff that he blunders, and it was an absolute blunder, and it's a huge mistake, and it's unacceptable. And he is getting raked over the coals for it. Like, I don't think Mario is getting people in the chat corrected us. At one point, one of us said it was Max. It was not Max Williams. They both wear number four. It's difficult.
When you're on live, by the way,
yeah,
it's really difficult.
It's tough.
This is a team that has two M.A. Williamses wearing number four. At one point, they had a Nico Fala and a Fala Nico.
Yeah, it's
like...
It's
there was a class in which they had a Jalen and a Jaden Watson.
Struggle bus. But either way, like, yes, those individuals are gonna get raked over the coals, and rightfully so. But like, there's a level at which the buck has to stop higher up than, you know, Mario Williams making a blunder, than, you know, Justin Dedich not making his block on that on the safety or anything like that. Like,
yeah,
it has to come from the full picture. And the full picture of the game, realistically, is that USC did enough to win USC's offense did enough to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
USC's special teams, personally, I don't think did enough to lose the game. Because special teams that lose the game are the ones that have punts blocked and give up touchdowns. If you on special teams give up a touchdown, then we're talking sort of different things. So the blunder of the special teams cost USC 2 points.
They did enough to lose a tight game.
Yeah, the blunder, the special teams blunder.
To get the loss completely in their own way.
The special teams blunder cost USC 2 points. So, okay, yes, that's bad. It's certainly in a game you lost by one, that's bad. Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's the other thing too. I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about the point aspect to it. Because my thought was, okay, let's just say that SC, let's say they start at the 25 on that drive and they just go three and out.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing when they go three and out and it's not a safety. Tulane has the ball and comes down. It's 45-37.
They're down by eight.
They're 2-point conversion to tie it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're down by eight. And I mean, even if USC is at the goal line and they get stuffed at the goal line and have to punt from out of their own end zone and have to punt and give Tulane the ball back at the 40-yard line on their own side of the field. Tulane still had to go down and get the 2-point conversion, which they probably still could have done if they didn't overthink like their first 2-point conversion. So like, you know, this kind of stuff happens. It's it's part of the issue. I still go back to you gave up 46 points. I don't know. There's not much more to say beyond that.
Yeah. Well,
there are mistakes. There are always mistakes. Every team makes mistakes. It's part of playing football. The broader picture has to be what you ultimately look at. And the broader picture for USC in 2023, unfortunately, ends with a really, really outstanding quarterback, a really, really outstanding offense, and inefficient defense on the other side.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Also, I wanted to mention for the record, like, if you want to talk about like blaming the offense or having like Lincoln Riley take blame for the play calling or anything like that, like, we spent some significant portions of this season also talking about how could the offense help the defense? How could they help with time of possession and with methodical drives and with all of those kinds of things? They literally did that in this game. USC had twice as much time of possession as Tulane. 39 minutes and 49 seconds to Tulane's 20 minutes and 11 seconds of possession. So if you're looking at game plans that were going to benefit the defense got a lot of rest in this game.
So, okay, but
and it didn't make a difference.
Yes, but also why did they get so much rest?
Because USC was methodical.
What's the other side of that?
I don't know what you're getting at.
The other side of that is that Tulane had seven rush plays of 10 yards or more and five of 15 or more. They had gains of 87, 59, 40,
yeah, but,
47, 62.
Yes, but that's the problem is USC's offense was doing the thing that during a segment of the season,
yes,
we spent a lot of time talking about how
even USC... Like,
But I'm not defending the defense on that front. Yes, they gave up explosive plays. That's the issue.
Yes,
but like, USC's if you take those if you force Tulane to score the touch, let's say you take the first how many drives did Tulane have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 drives. If you give them the touchdowns that they have in the first three quarters of the game and just force any of their drives in the fourth quarter to be a minute or two longer, they are out of time. They don't have time to win the game.
Yeah.
Because USC took so much time off the clock. Because USC did exactly what people were asking.
Yeah, but the entire game changed at that point. Yeah, I don't think
you're arguing sort of the. Do you get the point of what I'm saying, though?
I get the point.
If they had forced Tulane to take 5 minutes to score at any point in this game, Tulane doesn't have time at the end of the game to win the game.
I took your point as you saying that we had talked about after the Utah game, well, if SC was just methodical,
if SC,
the defense would be rested and they could make stops.
Keep your defense off the field.
That
didn't help because the defense was off the field.
But when you point out the time of possession, the 39 minutes for SC, really it's 40 minutes to 20 minutes. That's not just because of the offense. That's a big part of that is because the defense was getting gashed.
But the offense was getting the ball back, and well, they had first drive was 10 was 9 minutes and 2 seconds.
Yes, but both sides
second
of the
drive
ball
was 5 minutes. Yeah, but there's not a zero sum on that.
I'm not saying
it doesn't matter how long it took Tulane to score on the other side when USC's first two drives take 15 minutes off the clock.
No, I get that. I'm just saying like you isn't all a credit to the offense because
the offense took 15 minutes off the clock.
Yeah.
15. I'm saying the defense was not on the field for the first. They were on the field for 15 minutes of the first 18 minutes of the game.
It clearly didn't matter because SC was,
which is what I'm saying, which is literally
what you're arguing.
I don't know what you're not getting about it. If the defense hadn't given up as many explosive plays, Tulane would have had to take more time off the clock. Then USC's clock killing methodicalness.
But if you change the time, the entire game changes. So
okay.
It doesn't even matter.
That's fine. We're not arguing the same thing. I'm not going to try and convince you to understand what I'm arguing anymore.
That's fine. Anyways, let's take a quick break to talk about, open up the mailbag or the question, the chat bag, whatever. You got a question, fire it away in the chat. Throw in question before it helps us catch those outs. And then we'll just talk some big picture stuff here and wrap this thing up. First of all, big picture going into next year. Very quick, three words, which I know you're not going to be
able to. I'm bad at that, so.
I know.
Yeah.
10 second response. Rapid fire. Do you feel better or worse about next year right now?
Worse. Well, I don't know. Okay. Better. Because Caleb Williams is that damn good.
Okay.
Caleb Williams is so damn good that he's going to carry USC to a 10-win season no matter what happens with anybody else on the team or the coaching staff. He's carrying USC to a 10-win season. And I feel very, very strongly about USC's receiving core that's coming back. Brendan Rice having an outstanding, ridiculous game. That's the Brendan Rice that you want to see. Bringing back Mario Williams, who in the end had 6 catches for 35 yards. A few of those catches were very important. They were third down conversions, and he had a couple almost catches that were just a little bit off and that were almost there. Taj Washington comes away with 109 yards. Great from him. Michael Jackson had a really strong outing with just 4 catches for 31 yards, but those tunnel screens to him are really, really exciting. Terrell Bynum's involved. Kyron Hudson's involved. Relique Brown looked like that's the blueprint for USC at running back going forward. Like, there is so much on this offense to get so, so excited about. They're going to even the offensive line, for instance. USC managed to, in a game where they didn't have Andrew Voorhees and they didn't have Brett Nealon, that offensive line, for the most part, is coming back.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I
so like that is extremely encouraging for me on this offense, because now I feel if we're just going to block this out, and this is not a 10-second answer, we're going to block this out, offense and defense, right? So on offense, how am I feeling going into next year? I am pumped because Josh Henson does such a good job with what's given to him that 5 on the offensive line. Well, I don't think they're going. I don't think that 5 includes like all Americans unless Justin Dietich takes a step forward. As a center, if he chooses to come back, but like you can work with the 5 that USC had there. You lose Bobby Haskins, but you just added a big tackle from Florida. So plug and play. The 5 that USC has on offensive line, I'm feeling good. I'm not going to worry about USC's offensive line going into next year.
Yeah.
So
well, I'm talking about it, that schematically, I think SC has
it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
The Lincoln Riley scheme. And his blocking schemes and everything
just benefits them.
It benefits them and puts them in a position to succeed. It's difficult to make that up when you have a guy go down in the middle of the week, like with Andrew Voorhees ahead of the Pac-12 championship game.
Mm-hmm.
But
whole offseason,
I think when you have a month for these guys to move around and gel, they play much better. Was the offensive line amazing in this game? No. You know, the holes in the running game were not there like they were all season. And they certainly missed Voorhees and Nealon, but they were more than good enough for SC to win this game. And that was something that you could not say at the beginning of December against Utah in the Pac-12 championship game, which was the problem for why SC couldn't overcome Caleb Williams' injury.
Well, okay.
In that game.
The other thing too is the offensive line gave, as GS in the chat says, the O-line gave Caleb Williams plenty of time to throw tonight. Yes, and that's a Caleb Williams who couldn't use his full force of mobility to escape from pressure and create more time for himself. So the offensive line, I think you're feeling very good about it. I think you're feeling extremely good about the defense, about the offense in general. Cut, move on to defense. Way worse. Way worse. Because to me, I'm less certain that the additions that USC is getting through the transfer portal will be the difference between USC having a defense that lives up to what the offense is putting on the table for them and versus just a defense that continues to be vulnerable in the most important moments of the game. That to me was the indictment on Alex Grinch in this game. It wasn't necessarily like, I think you can make an argument that there were personnel issues 100% that played into this because there were missed tackles by veteran players. There were guys who just were just flat out in position to make a play and didn't. And that's always going to impact the performance of your defense. And if you change out those players for better players, then those plays can rack up and you can start to improve on defense. So like there is that way of thinking. But in the critical moments we've seen from Alex Grinch, he has not had an answer to the other team. Mm-hmm. That's my issue. So I go in less confident about.
It was so fascinating because earlier on the season, the big talking point was the halftime adjustments.
Yes.
He had gotten better as the game had gone on, especially defensively. Looking back at the ASU game is prime example of that. And ASU, Rice, Fresno State, games in which SC just continually, Oregon State, got better as the game went on defensively. But that clearly did not continue because in SC's losses, they got worse as the game went on defensively.
Yeah.
And, you know, throughout several games, they got worse as the game went on as well. So, I think defensively, like I talked about before, I think that, you know, in outside of the final score and SC losing this game, I think you have to feel like this was a game in which, as a team, I think this couldn't, like, this went fairly decently in the sense of all the answers that were about that were there about the offense, about whether or not they would rebound in this game. First of all, whether or not SC would be interested in this game at all, I have questions about that. I never trust the USC team going into a bowl game that they weren't wanting to be in.
I mean, in the Pac-12 runner-up.
Yes, there was the Pac-12 runner-up curse. There was, which continues to be true, 0-11 they are now. But SC historically in games that they were not, bowl games that they were not hoping to be in, and that's not, it sucks to say that about the Cotton Bowl because the Cotton Bowl is a major bowl, and this is no discredit to Tulane. This is about SC looking at the playoff and then suddenly not being in it because they lost at the end of the Pac-12 championship game. So, you know, they end up in a bowl game that they were hoping not to be in. Historically, SC has not cared about those. I've seen many a Sun Bowl, many a Vegas Bowl, many a Freedom Bowl to know exactly how that goes down. Many a Holiday Bowl, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we've seen how SC reacts to those. They did not have that problem in this game. They showed up. Caleb Williams, like you talked about before, absolutely could have taken this whole month off. And I don't think anyone, you know, could have given him any trouble for it. He got hurt, and it probably would have been the right move to maybe rest his hamstring another month. But no, he played. SC only had one opt out, and it was Jordan Addison. And you can even say that wasn't an opt out because he was still rehabbing an injury that he had been playing through. So Thule played. Mekhi Blackman could have opted out if he wanted to. He played. You know what I mean? Like, SC gave a damn, and they showed and they answered the bell. They did not no-show this game like the 2012 Sun Bowl, and I think SC deserves a lot of credit for that. Lincoln Riley deserves a lot of credit for that, given SC's history. That said, defensively, everything was terrible, like we talked about, and I said early on in the show, the optimistic view is that this is now puts everything to a critical point to where they have to make changes on defense. And Lincoln Riley now does not have the ability to look back at a good bowl performance and say, you know what, that was something to build upon and solidify that his faith in Grinch and all that stuff. No, that does not exist. He doesn't get that luxury. And I think that's a good thing going forward because even if Grinch doesn't get fired, I think that at least puts the onus on those conversations to be difficult and force changes. And then, yeah, let's get to the questions here in the chat. We got a bunch of them. Start filing through these. West Texas Mike, did you like the field goal to go up 15 rather than go for it?
What was the context of that?
I'm trying to pull up the place right now.
Yeah. So that was after the fumble, right? It was in the fourth quarter?
Yes, it was in the fourth quarter. It was a 3rd-and-9 from the Tulane 31.
Third and nine in that context. I think it was the right play to. So here's the thing. If you're Lincoln Riley, can you really anticipate Mario Williams dropping with a fair catch at the 2 yard line?
Yeah, and with four and a half minutes to go in the game. Yeah, like
you go up two touchdowns with the 2-point conversion. I think that's the right call.
Yeah.
Did it backfire a little bit? Sure, but again, how are you supposed to anticipate Mario Williams making a boneheaded play and then your offense giving up a safety and then the way the game ended? I'm not going to be too harsh on at third and nine. I don't think that's the one.
D-more 912 says that Grinch needs to resign, not be fired. I think we talked about this years ago when people would say this about Clay Helton, that he needs to resign and be embarrassed and all that stuff. I shouldn't say we all, because not everyone has the luxury, but if you have a job right now, would you resign out of shame? No, you wouldn't. Why should we expect anyone else to resign out of shame out of their job? Like,
yeah.
No, if you have a job, you are not going to resign. You're going to make them pay you to go away.
Yeah.
You would be dumb otherwise. You know what I mean? Like, no, that I understand the sentiment, but that's not how it works.
Oh, for the records, it was a third and nine. USC completed a pass, so it was fourth and four. So it probably was more reasonable
you're right.
to try to attempt it, but I'm still going up 15. I think that's a fair.
Yeah. If they don't get that fourth and four, and Tulane comes down and scores, people are roasting, Lincoln Riley for going for it there. It's the whole confirmation bias thing of, outcome bias. So, Torin says, Alicia Michael, is there any way to get a transcript of the comments? As painful as the game was, these comments are absolutely gold. you just got to like rewatch it and scroll it through. So we have it set up to where the live chat will replay with the content. So if you go back and rewatch, all the chat will act as if it is live. But I don't think there's a way to just print out a thing.
Yeah.
I don't think. No. Warren says, why? We already talked about that one. Sorry. David says, so when are we just going to call the AT&T Stadium a curse?
I
think that's valid. Yes.
It felt like a curse before. Now it's definitely a curse.
SC has not won in a domed stadium since 1995.
And all three of those losses at AT&T were painful in their own right.
Yes, absolutely.
Like three different kinds of painful, but all painful.
Aren't you glad we didn't make the trip?
Thank God.
AJ says, how do you expect USC to beat Oregon, Washington, and Utah next year?
By outscoring them.
There you go. First of all, they get two of the three at home.
Yeah.
I think we'll be helpful. Secondly, as good as those teams are going to be offensively, certainly Oregon and Washington. I don't know where Utah is going to be in terms of who they got coming back. Is Cam Rising coming back again? I think
we still don't know. I'm sort of assuming he is, because I don't see talk about him with the draft.
Yeah.
So
as good as Oregon and Washington will be on offense, they should be top 10, top five offenses in the country.
Yeah.
SC should be there, right there with them. So, you just have to, you have to be somewhere close defensively, right? Alex says, why wasn't Caleb under center when they pin there at the goal line? It takes much more time to at the line of scrimmage to get to the ball to the running back. Totally a bad call.
This is a nationwide debate about short play calls from shotgun that I don't think we have time to litigate here. It's just because that's the way that the offense runs.
I do not care about this.
It's not my hill to die on.
It's a lot of people's thing about going under center. You go under center and your back is back there. I mean, a lot of times, like if you're in I formation, your running back would be further back than they would be in shotgun. So, you know, like, I don't know, if your blockers didn't win their block and got pushed off the ball immediately on the snap, then it didn't matter where your quarterback lined up, did it?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. I think that, again, this goes back to outcome bias. Alex says, Where will USC rank in the Pac-12 by the end of the year?
Of 2023?
Yeah. We're not in 2022 anymore.
It depends on which side of my brain is working. If the side that is thinking about the offense is working, number one, and if the side that's thinking about the defense is working, then number four. I don't know.
Yeah, well, we will see. I think that the Pac-12 is so crazy next year because I think that SC would, in a silo, in a vacuum, is in position to absolutely be the cream of the crop in the Pac-12 next year. If you didn't know how good the Pac-12 was,
yeah.
The Pac-12 is so deep that SC could be, like, legitimately could take several steps forward as a team and still not win the conference, because you have to imagine Oregon's going to be even better. You have to imagine Washington's going to be even better.
The issue,
there's no reason to assume that Utah won't be as good as they are.
The only thing about Utah is that you get them at the Coliseum this time. But like, yes. But those are still, the schedule is very difficult.
Oregon's, like, we all sort of expect Oregon State to take another big step forward, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The only team that I think is taking a step backwards is UCLA. Everyone else in the conference, I expect to be better next season.
Yeah.
That's,
well, and that's also hard to predict, so you just don't know.
Yeah.
What USC can control is that they have an offense that's coming back that's going to be among the best in the country.
Right.
And they have a defense that is not up to par, and that is the issue that needs to get addressed.
Yeah. And my thing is that, you know, too, the Pac-12 sort of got fortunate this year to be in a situation where the way the schedule played out, like SC and Washington didn't play. Washington avoided Utah and SC. So it got in this thing to where it was allowed to wear nearly half the conference. It got 10 wins. Next year, I think the teams could be better, but the records might not be. So we'll see. Corey says, Alicia, when will you hold Grinch accountable?
Someone didn't listen to the first hour of this podcast is what I learned.
No.
Yeah. Also, but I do want to laugh because I got like slammed in the comments in our last two shows, in our last two post-game episodes about like criticizing the defense, which is funny because like apparently I don't hold Grinch accountable, but also I get slammed for saying that the defense is bad, which by the way, the evidence is before us. So I don't know. Can't win.
Yeah, you can never win. SJ says, would you be feeling much better if SC somehow squeaked out a win? I think I would be almost as frustrated after the defense's overall performance.
No, that would have been, like Michael said, like that would have been the best case scenario, is winning the game because Caleb Williams deserved it.
Yeah.
And Brendan Rice deserved it and all that, and getting to end on a win, which you always want to end on a win, while also getting to say the defense is not good enough. Make a change. So, yeah.
Yeah. Christopher says, what do you think of Relique Brown today? Where do you project his role to evolve next season? I'm going to go straight out and say that I think he's running back number one.
I think this is the minimum blueprint for Relique Brown. Like, I think we're going to see his involvement in the offense in this game mirrored at least, if not more.
I want to see him be SC's Marshall Faulk, or I guess that's Reggie Light, right? Someone who's going to get 15 carries a game and five catches and maybe 25 touches. You include special teams, like just be involved everywhere. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Mark says, "Well,
I don't know. I wouldn't have him returning kicks next year, personally, but
in a." Perfect world, not sure.
Yeah.
Mark says, will Mike Bone tell Lincoln Riley if Grinch doesn't have the defense playing to the level that they need or expects them to be, that to say that he needs to be replaced? I don't know. I first of all, I think that when you go out and get Lincoln Riley, you are getting Lincoln Riley to make those decisions.
Yeah.
You are not, as an AD or as a department as a whole, you do not go out to get Lincoln Riley to tell him what to do after year one. You get Lincoln Riley because you trust him to be able to make that decision after year one.
Mike Bone goes to Lincoln Riley and says, you have a blank check to find the defensive coordinator that will win you a national title. That's what Mike Bone's responsibility is to do.
Or at least convey to Lincoln Riley that the blank
that
check
he has
is there
a blank
when,
check.
If necessary. Yeah. Ross, has any thoughts on why Davis hasn't played this year? I think this is Rayshon Davis.
I mean, all season we said the linebacker play is so bad. Why isn't this kid getting a chance? And all season, people in the background were sort of saying like he doesn't know the playbook or they just don't trust him or all that. And we had to assume that it was just that they don't trust him, that they didn't trust him. Finally saw him, and as far as I'm concerned, was he the savior of the defense? No, but he was certainly not worse than the linebackers that USC had playing for them all year, and he made some plays. So why didn't Rayshon Davis get a chance? Because they didn't trust him. Should they have trusted him? To me, on evidence of this game, they should have trusted him instead of continuing to put out players that straight up were not good enough to be on the field playing for USC.
Yeah, for sure. SJ says, do you think Bone has the power of will to force changes on D? We just basically talked about that. Poncho Cam says, how much do you pay Jim Leonard? Blank check.
Blank check.
Yeah.
Yep. What's the highest paid defensive coordinator in college football? That much.
It's probably like $2.5 million or something. It's probably somebody making that. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. But the other thing too is you give them reference isn't hit my head. Blank check will be fine. Last question, D-more 912. Who can we pick up from on defense from the portal?
Already picked up quite a few guys. There continue to be quite a few guys out there. That's what most of our shows for the foreseeable future are going to be sort of looking at. So stay tuned.
Which perfect segue to talk about the future of the podcast. This is it. It's over, guys.
We're
last
done.
Podcast we're ever doing. Thank you and goodbye. See ya. We will be back as always every Monday night here during the off season. We're going to come up with our offense or our off season plan as we go forward, but we will be back for sure next Monday. We're not going to have a fallout episode for the Cotton Bowl because we've got some personal stuff to deal to later this week. So we will be back next week, Monday, and then tell you all of our off-season plans then.
So you all know, Monday, 5 Pacific, that's going to be our off-season schedule.
Yeah.
We will sort of keep that up, and if anything changes as far as adding additional episodes or doing other things, we'll let you know. But Monday at 5 o'clock, short of other random things
Pacific,
that come up,
right?
5 p.m. Pacific, yes,
live on YouTube. And then after that, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you'll probably have it up by Tuesday morning, so first thing in the morning hopefully. So that's all we need to tell you. Thank you guys as always for joining us here on the CarCast. It's been awesome. Doing this year has really, we've talked about before, really revived the pod, doing it live and hanging out with you guys after games. Even if SC wins or loses, these have been a blast to put together. We appreciate you guys for joining us. As always, be sure to like and subscribe, like the stream, subscribe to the channel so you can join us every time going forward. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a review. 5 stars helps us grow the show so much there as well. So until then, we will see you. Happy New Year. We'll be back next Monday. So long and farewell.
See ya.
See ya.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.